How many women artists can you name? Even most art enthusiasts can have trouble coming up with a long list, a situation that Katie Hessel would like to correct with her new book, The Story of Art Without Men. Katie is an art historian, presenter, and curator, and she joins us now to tell the story of five women artists we probably should know.
Hello, everyone. My name is Katie Hessel, and I'm a British art historian and author of a new book called The Story of Art Without Men. This book aims to retell art history with pioneering male artists who spearheaded movements and redefined the canon. Beginning in the 1550s and ending in the 2020s, this fully illustrated 500-page book spans across the globe to introduce you to myriad styles and movements, interweaving women, their work, and stories within. The book takes its name from a very famous title called The Story of Art by E.H. Gombrich, the introductory Bible to art history, which is a book that I read growing up and loving. But here's the thing. His first edition included zero women artists when it was published in 1950, and it took until the 16th edition to include just one female artist, that being Katte Kollwitz, the great German expressionist. But I want to introduce you in this episode to five key artists from the book. But first, I want to take you back to my beginnings and how I came to realize the unbelievable gender imbalance in art history. So my name is Katie Hessel. I'm the founder of an Instagram account called The Great Women Artists, which celebrates female artists on a daily basis, ranging from young graduates to old masters. To tell you a bit of background, I started the account nearly 8 years ago in October 2015 after I had been studying the work of Alice Neal, an American portrait artist, in depth at university. It was the first time I really thought about the underrepresentation of women artists and how Alice Neal not only fought to be a portrait painter amongst those working in post-war New York City when abstract expressionism and minimalism was all the rage, but a woman in a male-dominated field. Alice was also the painter of the late and great feminist art historian Linda Nochlin, who penned the essay, Why Have There Been No Great Women Artists, at the dawn of the feminist movement in the January 1971 issue of Art News, which is the name that my blog cites and is very much in homage to Nochlin. But my idea really came into existence after I visited an art fair in October 2015, when I realized that when I walked into that tent, I looked around me and I looked at all the artworks in front of me and realized not a single one was by a woman artist. But then I had to ask myself a series of questions. Could I name 20 women artists off the top of my head? Could I name 10 pre-1950, any pre-1850? The answer was no. Had I essentially been looking at the history of art from a male perspective, the answer was yes. So I was shocked, and I thought starting an Instagram blog would not only challenge me to find a different woman artist every day, but it was a way to put my knowledge to good use and tell stories about those artists who had so often been overlooked by the museums and the galleries. Because when listing the artists who are typically said to define the art historical canon, it's the following names that come up. It's Giotto, it's Titian, Leonardo, Caravaggio. But what about Gentileschi, Kaufman, Powers, Lewis, MacDonald, McIntosh, Valadon, Hock, Asawa, Krasner, Mendieta, Pindell, Hamid? If I hadn't actively been studying women artists for the past 8 years, I doubt I would even know more than a fraction of these names. But should any of this be surprising? Not according to statistics. In London, where I live, the National Gallery's collection is made up of just 1%. Women artists. The Royal Academy of Arts, in its over 250-year history, is yet to have a solo exhibition by a woman artist in its main galleries. The Turner Prize, which is one of the most prestigious prizes in the world, it took until 2017 for the first woman of colour to ever win the prize. But when we think about how we place monetary value on genders in society, art prices reveal just that, because a woman artist, on average, today in the Western world, goes for just 10% of her male artist contemporary. So, the night of the art fair, I couldn't sleep. And frustrated and angry about what I'd witnessed, I typed the words, like any millennial art historian would do, women artists into Instagram. Nothing appeared. And so my Instagram was born, and I set myself the task of writing daily posts. Because this book and my work in general is not just about breaking down the gender imbalance. It's not just about breaking down the hierarchy between art forms, saying that textile is equal to painting, sculpture is equal to architecture, pottery is equal to monumental work. Nothing should be hierarchical. But also, I wanted to break down the stigma around elitism in art history. So I adopted an accessible style. And I want to appeal to anyone of any art historical level interested in learning about the stories of these mostly overshadowed artists. This is also something I did on a more expansive scale with my podcast, The Great Women Artists Podcast, which I launched in 2019. It's not that I believe there to be anything inherently different about work created by artists of any particular gender. It's more that society and its gatekeepers have always prioritized one group in art history. And I think it is vital for this to be addressed and challenged. So nearly 8 years later, the result is this book, The Story of Art Without Men. Now, this is not a definitive history. It would be an impossible task, but I'm looking to break down the canon that I have so often been confronted by in the culture that I have grown up in. The canon of art history is global. However, with the male Western narrative being so unjustly dominant at the expense of others, it is this I unpack and challenge. Because artists pinpoint major moments of history through a uniquely expressive medium, and if we aren't seeing art by a wide range of people, then we just aren't seeing society as a whole. So this is my take on the story of art without men. Because while the statistics remain so shocking, it feels important to remove the clamor of men in order to listen to the significance of others to our cultural histories. Beginning in the 1500s and ending with those in the 2020s, this book is divided into five parts, which are each based on significant shifts or moments in history. To avoid artists being seen as the wife of, the muse of, the daughter of, the model of, or the acquaintance of, I have situated women within their social and political context in the time in which they lived. And while I have grouped artists within their established movements for the purpose of clarity, I'm keenly aware that artists are not the products of categories, but rather categories are the products of artists with varied lives who spearheaded key changes in styles. So although this book merely skims the surface of many of these artists' multi-layered and for some still evolving careers, which can encompass more mediums, cultures, styles, or time spans, I hope it will give you an insight into at least a fraction of the work of non-male artists who have contributed to the story of art. So I'm going to now tell you about five different artists in the book. I'm going to start with an artist called Artemis Gentileschi, who was born in 1593 in Rome. She was associated with the Baroque movement, which is a movement that came to fruition in the 17th century, which was infused with stunning light effects, often showed biblical narratives for the purpose of getting people back into the Catholic Church. And so in her lifetime, she became an international celebrity, but she had the advantage of being raised in an artistic family growing up in her father's studio in Rome. Because here's the thing, women artists didn't even have access to the life room where they could study the nude and study that anatomical accuracy until the 1890s. Artemis Gentileschi signed and dated her first large-scale painting when she was just 17. It was called Susanna and the Elders, and it recalls the tale of a young virtuous woman who was bathing in her garden when two lecherous men try and seduce her. She fills her viewers with discomfort and anguish, but she captures the tense moment when Susanna shields her body away from the intruders, perhaps showing what life might have been like as a woman. Gentileschi was an international celebrity in her time. She even had people paint pictures of her hand so they could feel like they were closer to this absolute genius. She also made fantastic works of biblical heroines such as Judith's, Lucretia's, Susanna's, and more. And she really upended all we knew in our history. And my book actually begins with a quote by her from 1649. She says, "I'll show you what a woman can do." The next artist I want to tell you about is Harriet Powers. Harriet Powers appears in the 19th century chapter on quilt making in America. Now, art historians have overlooked quilt making, I think, as a key medium for far too long, no doubt in part as a hangover from the academies in the 18th century who dismissed embroidery as craft. Quilt making is important artistically, but also as a political tool and a medium which women have dominated. And Harriet Powers was extraordinary. She was enslaved in Georgia, and it is thought that she, like most quilt makers, learnt sewing from her female family members. She received prizes for her narrative-driven quilts with complex cutout and appliqué figures. She honed her art on an even more ambitious scale, and in 1895 made her most innovative work, Pictorial Quilt, which is a monumental quilt which comprises 15 densely packed scenes which recount a mix of Bible stories and miraculous legends. While we can only imagine why she chose to document these tales, we know her quilts were made for the purpose of being displayed, as opposed to practicality. But despite her impressive quilting abilities, she remained largely unknown to the public until the 1970s. The next artist I want to tell you about is called Suzanne Valadon. Now, she was working at the cusp and the dawn of the 20th century in Paris. This is where part two of the book really begins, with Paris in the avant-garde and the end of the 19th century. Modernity was in the air and women had more freedoms than ever. Because in the 1890s, they could now enter the life room and draw from the nude. They could travel unchaperoned and have some independence. But this section I've called What Makes Art Modern? Because what does modern art mean anyway? A break from the past, the eradication of hierarchies, lines shattered on a canvas, scenes of everyday subjects of modern society. Yes, you could say all of those things. But what makes art modern is the participation of women artists. They are no longer confined to working in the traditional realm under the guard of or dependent on men. They turned their gaze onto themselves, claimed spaces of their own, embraced sexual freedoms, and expressed as they had never done before. Now, one woman who epitomized this modernity was Suzanne Valadon. Nothing about her was conventional. She created taboo-breaking paintings which portrayed herself nude, and her style encompassed these sort of the colours of post-impressionism with the wildness of the Fauves. Her subjects too exude a fierce independence. She began her career as a circus performer, but her acrobatic dreams were cut short after an accident at the age of 15. So she turned to artist modelling, sitting for the likes of Degas and Toulouse-Lautrec, and she in turn taught herself how to paint, watching those who would actually paint and draw her. She had her first solo exhibition age 46, and in the early 1920s made this work called The Blue Room, which kind of upends this Venus-like pose that we've so often seen in art history. Look it up. It's a self-portrait. It's of her as both artist and model. She's wearing green striped trousers and loose strap pale pink top. She lies on her bed. Her bed is framed by a sea of rich blue floral fabrics. A cigarette hangs out her mouth, and she has pushed a collection of books to the back of her bed. She exudes self-assurance, and she has control of her brush, her image, and her life. She is showing that in the 1920s, a woman could do whatever she wanted. A woman working at a similar time to Valadon was the acclaimed artist Augusta Savage. She was right at the center of Harlem in the 1920s and 30s, home to the epicenter of Black cultural creativity known as the Harlem Renaissance. Savage was raised in a strict family in Florida and arrived in New York City with just $4.60. She came to the fore in the 1920s and mastered emotionally tender and stoic life-size figures and portrait busts, painted with shoe polish for that bronze effect. I always say to people, use whatever resources you can around you. And I love the fact that Savage, despite not having much money at that point, used this shoe polish in such an innovative way to actually create this bronze effect. Now, Savage was an advocate for equality in particular education, having herself been denied a scholarship to study in France because of her race. But she was soon able to travel to Paris to witness the splendors of the avant-garde. But her breakthrough really came in 1937, when she was commissioned by the 1939 World's Fair to make a sculpture reflecting the contribution to music by African Americans. It was a work that was originally 16 foot high, placed in the middle of the World's Fair. It portrayed an elegant heart-shaped choir of black children whose bodies stand in the palm of God's hand. It earned Savage national press coverage, but although photographs of the work still survive, the sculpture itself was destroyed after the fair due to the lack of funding to pay its storage costs. Now, one makes us think the impact this work would have had on the world now and beyond. Now I'm going to end by telling you about how my book ends. We go through every movement in Western art history. We look at the Harlem Renaissance. We look at those at the forefront of the Great Depression with street photography. We look at abstract expressionism, minimalism, pop artists, the neo-concrete movement in Brazil. We look at the feminist movement. We look at the 80s with the likes of Jenny Holzer, Cindy Sherman, Francesca Woodman, Carrie Mae Weems. We look at the 90s. We look at the 2000s. And we end with those called the new masters in the 2020s. These are all artists born in the 90s, similar age to me, who are spearheading the new representation of oil paint, Jade Fedotatimi, Flora Ignovich, and Samaya Critchlow. Because I want to bookend the story of Art Without Men with artists who are working in the 1550s in oil paint and those working in 2023 with the same medium. I've attempted to write but a fraction of art history, and I hope that you will all come along and join me. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you, Katie. That was Katie Hessel with five big ideas from The Story of Art Without Men. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.